Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Let me tell you something about that girl. She's a mystery. You don't know what her deal is. I don't know what her deal is, or maybe I do. We'll never know. What we do know is that she's always right. I am William Clear. This is Pop Talk and Aliens, and it is a podcast. Episode 11. Thank you for listening. And this is our first inaugural open topics episode. I'm going to talk about a whole bunch of different things. No guests today, just me and you. And I'm going to talk about the media. It's something I observe with great interest. I used to work in news and sports news for a couple of years only, and it was a long time ago, but I do have some insight into the biz. So I want to analyze some things and break them down, give you my take on them. I'm going to talk about sports. The NBA is in full fling in terms of the playoffs right now, so I'm going to talk about a lot of the opinions that older people have versus the younger people, basketball then versus basketball now. Got some Star Wars news for you, and whatever else we get to. But first of all, first things first. On my first episode of this podcast, I rated every Elton John album from worst to first. I wasn't able to rate his latest album, Wonderful Crazy Night, because it wasn't out yet. Then when it came out, I tooled with the idea of Charlie Crabtree and I reviewing the album sort of in real time on the show. And then after hearing it a few times, I thought, and I said this on one of the episodes, it's not really worth your time to listen to that entire album because it's not that good. But over time, I've listened to it a few more times since then. I've not listened to it a lot because, again, it's not that good. But the other day, I took it for a spin, listened to the whole thing again, and it occurred to me that there are some really great moments on that album. They are moments and hooks and solos and musicianship that is going to be sadly lost because of the fact that no one is going to want to listen to that whole album. So what I decided to do was make it easy for you. And I have compiled the best moments from Wonderful Crazy Night into just a few minutes. A few clips that will take you through some of the best parts of that album. There are moments. There are worthy moments, and I want you to hear them. Elton John's original band is on the album. We've got Davy Johnstone. Nigel Olsen's on drums. Ray Cooper pops in from time to time. T-Bone Burnett did an excellent job of producing it. So here are its best moments in a convenient short form for you to enjoy. What a wonderful crazy night it was. We found a place to feel it. We knew where we were at. Stopped above, felt out of future.
And love with two blessings from above. I was here and I was gone, just a heartbeat from the past. But I went from paper wings to the real thing at last.
So those are what I consider to be the best moments of Wonderful Crazy Night. The rest of it, skip. But A for effort. They really did go for an upbeat rock and roll album, you know, heavily produced, great musicianship. But unfortunately, you know, when you're going for an upbeat album and you have a lyricist like Bernie Taupin, it's not really going to match up, because Bernie is a storyteller. And he also has a bit of the cynicism in him, the little bit of melancholy. And when you give him the assignment of writing 10 upbeat, happy songs, it's not going to work out. And it doesn't really work out on Wonderful Crazy Night, although he does have some great lyrical moments on this. But if you look at his great quote-unquote upbeat songs of the past, take something like I'm Still Standing, which is like a cheery anthem, right? But really, it's a fuck you song. You know, it's I'm Still Standing in spite of the fact that you are an asshole or a bitch or whatever. And there's many other songs. Sad songs say so much. Great upbeat, snap your fingers, dance around song. It's about sad songs and how great they are. So that's kind of Bernie Taupin's MO. Kind of a tough assignment for him on this album, but he has his moments, and those moments were showcased to you just now. So moving on from that topic, with some Star Wars news. Yes, there's good Star Wars news that I want to report to you in case you haven't heard of this good stuff. The first is, there is this website / YouTube channel called Collider. And these guys are, there's a bunch of nerds on this channel that talk about Star Wars, and they have this show called Jedi Council and movie news or whatever. You know, but they have enough clout to where they can get interviews with stars and with famous people and people involved with Star Wars and so forth. And very recently, they did an interview with Ewan McGregor, Obi-Wan Kenobi from the prequels, if you don't know, and you should. They asked Ewan about the possibility of doing a standalone Star Wars movie as Obi-Wan Kenobi that would take place between Episode 3 and Episode 4. Because there's 20 years that Obi-Wan Kenobi is sitting on Tatooine, ostensibly learning how to become a Force ghost from Qui-Gon Jinn and watching over Luke Skywalker until the time is right. Obi-Wan Kenobi must have had an adventure or two in that time. I don't think he just sat around in his little hovel the entire 20 years. I mean, I'm sure he went down to Mos Eisley. He says to Luke in episode 4, this place can be a little rough. And which leads me to imagine that Obi-Wan Kenobi has had to stir the shit in that place in the past. So I'd love to see that. I'd love to see whatever else they can come up with. And the best part, they asked Ewan McGregor about this and he said, I would love to do that. I would love to do it. And he talked a little bit about what he could imagine happening. And they asked him, have you been in talks with Lucasfilm about this at all? And he said, I'm not allowed to say. And that, my friends, is a resounding yes. A resounding yes. Because we know that they are going to make Star Wars standalone films. Obviously, Rogue One is coming out in December. The movie about the rebels who steal the plans to the Death Star leads into episode 4 and they blow it up. But they are also doing a Han Solo standalone movie. And that will come between... That will be released between episodes 8 and 9. So the schedule is Rogue One this December, episode 8 next December, Han Solo the December after that, and then episode 9. And then, we don't know. Hopefully, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi. But let me tell you something about this Han Solo movie. This movie is... They haven't cast Han Solo yet, and this movie is a film about his younger years, a young Han Solo. And the interesting thing about that is that I think they already did a young Han Solo movie called Star Wars. Of all the characters in the Star Wars universe, is there anyone that is less replaceable than fucking Harrison Ford? Honestly, you cannot fill those shoes. I don't care if he's a younger Han Solo. I don't care if he's an alternate universe Han Solo. You cannot fill those shoes. They don't need this movie. I am not looking forward to that. But thankfully, there's so many other Star Wars movies that I don't have to really care about Han Solo movie. And I don't. But I would love to see Obi-Wan. And Ewan McGregor, incidentally, in that same interview, did say that he hasn't been contacted to play a Force ghost in episode 8 or 9. So, you know, for whatever that's worth. Some people were speculating that we'd see Obi-Wan. He says no. Hopefully we'll see him in his standalone film. The other piece of news, George Lucas recently... He's trying to open some sort of Star Wars museum in Chicago. And he was being interviewed and he was talking about it. And somehow the conversation went to him saying that in terms of the first 6 movies that he worked on, the story sort of goes through the eyes of R2-D2. Because according to him, 100 years after Star Wars, R2-D2 relates the entire saga of Star Wars to the keeper of something called the Journal of the Wills. Now, the Journal of the Wills is something that George Lucas wrote, or it was some sort of story notes that he had when he first began on Star Wars, like a couple of years before. This was going to be a story ingredient of some kind, and he eventually ditched it, but he used it as sort of treatment for things that he was making for the backstory of Star Wars. And he has said in the past, he has dropped little bits about R2-D2 sort of being the keeper of the story. And if you look at it, if you look at those 6 movies, that kind of makes sense. I have a feeling that to some extent, it's George Lucas' revisionist history, which he is famous for. You know, he's famous for going back, coming up with ideas, and then pretending that those ideas existed the whole time. But I think to some extent, this one is actually probably true. And it's quite interesting how that's going to carry forward with episode 7, 8, and 9. Who knows? Because obviously R2-D2 in episode 7 wasn't in it a lot. Barely in it, so... You know, I don't know. You can extrapolate that theory as you like. Next bit of Star Wars news. Now that the Blu-ray of The Force Awakens has been released, a lot of people have questioned the fact that... I'm going to go really inside baseball here with the Star Wars, but a lot of people have questioned the fact that why the Starkiller base is able to drain the power of a sun until there's nothing left of it and then fire their weapon... Leading to the question, how many suns are surrounding the Starkiller base? Let's say there's 10 suns around the Starkiller base, which they never mention. That's still, you know, that's 10 shots, and then you're done. They had to use one whole sun to blow up the Republic core planets, and then they used another sun to almost blow up the Resistance planet. So that's 2 suns down the drain. How many are left? A lot of people were asking this question, and there's a guy named Pablo Hidalgo. This guy has worked for Lucasfilm for a long time. And he is sort of the gatekeeper of the consistency of storytelling within the Star Wars universe, the canon, if you will. This guy sort of maintains it all, and everything goes through him before it's finally written or published in extended universe. So he knows all. And he's on Twitter, and he's really, really nice to fans, and they ask him all these really, really intricate, detailed questions about the extended universe and everything like that. And he always answers. So I decided to nerd it up hardcore and tweet to Pablo Hidalgo, what the fuck is the deal with the Starkiller Base? How many suns does it have? And he said, the Starkiller Base is mobile. It moves around like the Death Star. So it moves from section to section of the galaxy to, you know, hook up with a new sun, drain it, shoot it, get onto the next one. Now, this is never mentioned in the movie. And it also doesn't really make sense that an entire planet can just move around at will. It also points out the fact that the Resistance knew where the Starkiller Base was when it was engulfing its second sun to destroy them. So how did the Resistance know where it got from one point to another? All of these questions. If you are a stickler, like I am, here's what Pablo Hidalgo further said about it. I asked him as a follow-up question. He said it was mobile. I asked him a follow-up question. I said, when was that decided? Was that in the original script? How come that's never mentioned? And he said, and this is a very revealing thing that kind of pisses me off. He said that it was decided that the Starkiller Base was mobile during post-production when they were putting together the third and final act of the movie. And that smacks of the type of revisionist history that I was just talking about with George Lucas. I think it's obvious from that statement that when they were writing the script, they didn't think of this. And until they got to post-production, someone was like, how many fucking suns are there that they have access to keep charging up their weapon? Well, one. And then they decided that this gigantic planet could just roll around the galaxy. So that pissed me off. But, you know, there's inconsistencies throughout the Star Wars universe from episode 4 to episode 7, episode 1, 2, and 3. They're all there. There's stuff that was just thrown in to make up for other things that had already happened and were semi-unexplained earlier. The nerd term for this is retcon, retroactive continuity. That means you have to explain something that was inconsistent in the past in order to make it consistent going forward. And that is exactly what this mobile Starkiller Base is. So for any of those of you who are wondering why their Starkiller Base can access so many suns, that's why. Because it's tooling around the galaxy looking for them. So there you go. And that is the Star Wars news section of this podcast. So now I'd like to talk about the media. The news media, the sports media. I don't want to get into internet media that much because it's a wasteland, dude. It's a wild west of conflicting information and opinions and people on YouTube making comments that say, you know, fuck your mother because someone said I like this video or I don't like this video. Have you ever seen, do you ever look at the YouTube comments? I never even look anymore. Because if it's a video that's been on YouTube for more than like a week, the comments have already descended into this fire pit of hatred. And I talked about that a little bit with Charlie Crabtree on our Star Wars podcast. So no need to really go there again. But anyone who's read YouTube comments, and that's probably all of you, know that it's just a shootout and not worth reading at all costs. But in terms of television media and shit-talking, the Golden State Warriors are, as of this podcast, tied with the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference Finals 1-1. Now, I'm going to get a little inside basketball for a little while. So if you're a fan, I think you'll enjoy it. If not, skip ahead like 7 minutes, 8 minutes. I should be done by then. I want to talk about all of the shade that gets thrown on the Warriors, as they say. The hate. Hating on the Warriors. Now, the Warriors are financially, across the United States, and if not the world, the most popular team in basketball. Steph Curry jerseys sell number one. People love them. They get huge ratings. But the media loves to pick on these guys. Lots of them do it, especially older players that have popped up out of the woodwork and said, our team could have beaten those Warriors. We would have beat them. We would have taken care of them in five back in our day. Particularly Charles Barkley, is at the forefront of this movement, if you will. Let me tell you why that is complete horseshit, because there's a lot of reasons. The first is, older players like to talk about, first off, how the superstars of their day, what they talk about when they talk about their time is a tougher defense. Over the last 20 years, the rules have changed defensively in the NBA pretty substantially. One of them, one of the biggest ones, is that you cannot, I'm going to get inside basketball here, hand check someone as they are coming to the basket. What that means is, in the old days, if I'm guarding you, you have the ball, and you're coming towards the basket, I can literally keep my hand out to push you away. You can't do that anymore. You can't put your hands all over a dude who's running to the basket. What does that do for the NBA? Well, it makes it more exciting, because now a guy can actually drive and score without someone hounding him physically the entire way. The person who defends a guy coming to the basket now has to play actual defense. They have to be quick with their feet, they have to be quick with their arms to keep them up, and they have to stay with the guy until he gets to the basket without putting their hands all over him. It's more entertaining, and the defenders are way better. Because back in those days, you could take a guy with medium talent who was big to fucking manhandle a guy when he was coming to the basket. If modern day defenders could do that, they would shut down these older teams. Why? Because they're quicker now, they're faster on their feet, they're skilled. A lot of them are stronger and more athletic, because in the old days, it was small guys at point guard and huge, big fucking slow guys that played center and forwards in the back. Now you have guys that can play all kinds of different positions. They're versatile defenders, and they don't need to hand check you. And if they could hand check you, you would not fucking score. All you need to do is watch, go on YouTube and watch a few minutes. Stay out of the comment section. Go to YouTube, watch a few minutes of a game from the mid-90s. Watch guards like the big-mouthed Kenny Smith, who is on Inside the NBA on TNT. Watch his play, and then watch some Steph Curry highlights. Watch this guy try to drive to the basket with someone with his hands all over him. And then try to imagine this guy trying to drive to the basket against an elite defender in the NBA who doesn't need to put his hands on him. The guy who doesn't need to put his hands on him is going to stop him anyway. I'm not exaggerating to say this. There are tons of guys from these quote-unquote good old days that couldn't even play in the NBA anymore. Bill Laimbeer, the famous goon who played for the bad boy Pistons in the 80s, the guy had minimal basketball talent at best, but he was good at beating people up, he was good at throwing elbows, he was good at shit-talking, and so he had a role on that team. Now, when people actually have to be athletic to play defense, that guy would get schooled up and down, and he would be playing in the D League at best. And you might say, Bill, you're just saying this because you love the Warriors and you want to prove that how great they are. No, it's not that. If you put the Warriors up against the 96-97 Bulls, or whatever team it was that won 72 games, that the Warriors just broke their record, the Warriors might not win that series because of the athletic ability of that team. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, those guys could dominate. Well, particularly Jordan. Pippen was more of a second-hand guy. But in terms of a role player and his versatility, those guys could completely kick ass in this league. And Michael Jordan would probably still be the best player if you transported him in today. They also ran an intricate offense. They ran an intricate defense. They were a great team. And they would give the Warriors all that they could handle and probably more. But in general, the teams of that time could not hang with the teams of today. If you look at the, I believe it's 1993 championship where the Rockets played the Magic. Not one game in the entire finals, not one game, no one scored 100 points or more. Every score in those finals was under 100 something to under 100 something else. It was fucking boring. And like I said, there was all this hand checking, there's all this manhandling, elbows. It was so boring. And primarily, what they did in those days was isolate. Meaning, you give the ball to Michael Jordan, everybody else gets as far away from him as possible, and you let him go one-on-one with his defender. He breaks down the defender, he scores, Michael Jordan. Done and done. You hardly ever see that in the NBA today. Why? Because again, there's too many athletic players. They run very intricate defensive schemes now. where everybody can rotate, everybody can guard anybody else, and one-on-one play is just not part of the game anymore. The other part of that is something that old-timers like to say now, well, Steph Curry wouldn't have been successful in my day because the great defenders, the guys who hand-check, use that gimmick, they say that Steph Curry would have problems because he would have to defend the other point guard, and the other point guard would go after him and get him in foul trouble. Well, here's the thing that they're missing once again. The NBA defenses today are not played in this one-on-one fashion. If you watch a Warrior game, you will see that different people guard different people at different times because they're versatile and athletic, and Steph Curry doesn't have to sit there and guard a Russell Westbrook every time Russell Westbrook brings the ball down the court. The defenses are as intricate as offenses. Part of what leads to NBA teams today being able to run the kind of schemes that are far more complicated, complex, and effective than the shit they were running in the 90s is the fact that advanced stats and analytics are used all over the place today. The Golden State Warriors, by no coincidence, have been winning awards for their analytics use in sports and in basketball for the last couple years. Again, it's not a coincidence. But if you talk to these old-timers, Oscar Robertson, Charles Barkley, they have both gone on record saying that the analytics are silly and stupid and you don't need them because basketball is a game that's played in the moment. What they mean is, I don't understand these numbers, so I am going to reject them. Because advanced analytics tell you tons. Now, again, yes, when you're playing the game, fluid motion, basketball is like jazz. You know, there's a basis for your playing, and then you kind of improvise and do what you need to do within that context. That's fine. But when you're guarding someone, and you know that they always go two steps to their right when they're scoring, or you know that they tend to pull up exactly around 17 to 18 feet from the basket, you can adjust to that quite easily. And if the teams of yesteryear had access to these stats, I'm sure they would use them too. But the point is that these older players have no understanding, basically, of the modern game of basketball. It's faster, once again, more athletic, more versatile, different types of players, different types of plays, different types of defenses. And Steph Curry would absolutely thrive. I mean, here's another thing. Back in the days that I was telling you about the NBA Finals where nobody scored over 100, they actually ended up moving the three-point line closer to the basket to try to encourage scoring. And then they realized after a few years of that, you know what? It's not that the three-point line's not close enough. It's that the defense is like football defense, and we have to widen it up, and we have to stop people from just shoving each other around for 48 minutes. But can you imagine what Steph Curry would have done with a three-point line that was even closer? That guy, as soon as he comes across the timeline, as soon as he comes across half court, he is a threat to score from anywhere. And no goddamn thug from the 90s, your Charles Oakleys, your Ron Harpers, your Dale Davises, they can't stop that. It just doesn't work. And by the way, that dude gets roughed up all night every game. You watch what's going on off the ball, and you don't pay attention to what the ball's doing, but you just watch Steph Curry run around. He's getting grabbed. He's getting elbowed. Anything physical that you can get away with these days, he's getting it. This argument is total bullshit, and I'm tired of it because it's based on envy, jealousy, and being a macho shithead. Being a macho shithead is the primary driving force for these types of arguments. And when you round it all up, when you put together all the things I've just been talking about, could this team play that team in this era, or could that team play this team in this era? There's a butterfly effect involved. Because whose rules are they playing by? Are they playing by the old rough rules, so now Draymond Green is allowed to put a guy in a headlock the whole time he's defending him? Or are they playing by today's rules where a guy like Ron Harper is going to be too slow to guard any of the fast point guards of today because all he did was hand check them and push them around? So one thing leads to another. If you change one thing here, you have to change it over there. And you can't put together a cross-era comparison of two teams. Unless you take all these things into consideration, in which case the athleticism of today is probably going to win out. I'm sorry. I love the old days too. I love watching Larry and Magic, and all. They would be great today too. But there was a lot of players in that era that had low talent, couldn't score, could only play defense, and hence, you got these boring-ass games where nobody scored 100. But if you look at it from the media's perspective, if you're Charles Barkley or Tracy McGrady or Oscar Robertson or Scottie Pippen or Derek Harper, any of these people who rip on today's game, you can see their point. What kind of press are they going to get if they just sit there and talk about how great the Warriors are and how great Steph Curry is? Nobody wants to see that. You know, they want to see it for a little bit because everybody's into it. But after a while, you're not just going to keep turning on ESPN First Take and watching Stephen A. Smith talk about how great they are. At some point, people have to talk shit so that the tease for the next segment of the show can be Charles Barkley says Steph Curry sucks. And then you want to keep watching. And that is the media at its best, which leads me into talking about the news media. Many, many years ago, I used to work for KPIX Television, which was a CBS affiliate in San Francisco. I mainly worked in sports, but I did have to work many, many shifts in the newsroom, the actual newsroom. And everything they tried to get to run as stories was negative. And that's no, I mean, anyone listening, you know that, obviously. There's all the, if it bleeds, it leads. Negative news is nothing new, and it's nothing that you haven't spotted easily over the years. But I want to go a step further and analyze one of the news shows that we did when I was there. And I actually have, in my possession, the rundown for this particular half hour of 11 o'clock local news. And I'm going to tell you what stories they ran. Here we go. I got it right here. Check this out. Lead story, a woman gets raped in Oakland. Second story, a drunk driving accident where a woman rolled her car off the side of the road and almost killed her two children of 5 and 7. Third story, a kid accidentally ate a pot brownie. An 8-year-old kid went into his parents' kitchen, ate a brownie, got high off it accidentally, and was taken to the hospital where he was treated and released. And I'm sure that kid is doing fine today. But it was the third story on a local news broadcast. Kid eats pot brownie. Fourth story. And so far we have no deaths, which is unfortunate, I'm sure, for the news director, because we got a woman who was sadly raped, and that's horrible. And my heart goes out to that woman. Hope she's, you know, okay these days, not suffering the lingering mental effects. But she didn't die, but that was the best they could do for the lead story. Now, the second story, and I believe this was debated as being the first story, was the drunk driving accident where a drunk mom rolled her car off the side of the road and damn near killed her two kids. She didn't. Everybody was brought to the hospital and once again treated and released. Thank God. But that was a news story. And the third, of course, being the kid who ate the pot brownie. The thing is this. The news, when you work in it, their sources, quote unquote, for news are basically this. They have a seismograph in case there's an earthquake or an earthquake coming that's detected. All right, maybe that can be news, maybe. The second thing, and most important thing, they have tons of police scanners. Police scanners that are running all over the Bay Area, because this was in San Francisco, all over the Bay Area from the North Bay all the way down to the South Bay, police scanners all over the place. And people that were hired, interns that were hired to just listen to this shit all day with bated breath, hoping for a massive crime. The third source was the AP Newswire, the Associated Press. Now, this is the main press of the world. It's where you're going to get stories from any place in the world, anywhere in the United States, the big stories. These are the people that are actually reporting, for the most part. The AP can, you know, they throw a lot of bullshit out there too, kids eating pot brownies and stuff too. But they also have real reporters who are actually going out in the field and getting real news. So every one of their reports comes into the newsroom and someone siphons through them and looks for the sexy negative stuff that they can run. And then finally, they have the broadcasts from every other station running on different televisions throughout the newsroom, and they're recording them the whole time. So anytime another news outlet reports something, they can get the video and they can run that story themselves. Now, they don't steal the video from the other newsroom, but the raw video will come through these different satellite feeds. So anytime they see someone beating the fuck out of someone, they tape that shit, they find out what the story is from the other news outlets already reported it, and then they make it their own. So getting back to this rundown, we have a rape, we have a drunk driving accident, we have the pot brownie. I'm sorry, I can never say that. Anytime I've ever told someone about that story, I always giggle a little bit. And I'm sure it was probably an unpleasant experience for that kid. Maybe he might have enjoyed it. I don't know. Pot brownies are really strong. I mean, it's been, you know, way over 20 years since I ate one of those fucking things. But I can tell you, they last a long time. So, you know, this poor kid, I don't know how he was treated, if he was given some sort of treatment that helped to lower the effects of it or whatever. But again, I'm sure that kid's doing fine now, and it's not a fucking news story. The next story after that, a balcony in Berkeley collapsed with some students on it. Now, when I say collapsed, because again, I was hands-on in this rundown. I was running as a production assistant. So I had to know about all these stories, and I even wrote one, which I'll get to in a moment. The balcony collapses, minor injuries. There were 5 people on this balcony. It didn't crumble to the ground and they all fell down and died. It just broke and people were slipping off of it and getting, you know, scrapes and bruises at the worst. That's a fucking news story. They ran that as a news story, a balcony collapsing with minor injuries. Next, weather. Now the weather, I don't know how the weather works at most stations. It could be different everywhere. It could be the same. The weatherman that we had at KPIX, a guy named Lawrence Karnov, I believe, he was great. He was a good weatherman, and he had all this cool shit set up to monitor the weather. He took it very seriously. You know, he didn't just want to go out there and say it's going to be sunny tomorrow. He really wanted to know where the storms were coming in, what the climate was doing. He really took it seriously, and had a lot of respect for that guy. So after the balcony disaster, we get the weather. Now, the next story, they had run out of violence, or in some cases, a lot of times, they intentionally will put in a feel-good story or a story that doesn't have anything to do with scrapes and bruises and rape and pot and drunk driving. And they'll put in a nice little story. And this was the gift that I was given to write. I was handed a newspaper clipping, which is another source they have for news. It's just a bunch of newspapers sitting around. And they'll cut out little stories and rewrite them and regurgitate them on the news. My story: 2 historic ships docked in the San Francisco Bay on this particular day, and there was a small little article. You know when you're looking at a newspaper, if you can remember what it was like to look at newspapers? You know, they'll have like a little story like at the bottom left, right? It's just a square, and it's like 3 paragraphs and a tiny little picture. That's what this was. 2 historic ships docked in the San Francisco Bay. There's like a 150-word story. And I was told to write it into a 30-second little blurb on the news because they had run out of other stuff, and at least this wasn't violent, so they could pretend they had some sort of balance in the news. So I labored over this because, first of all, it was the most boring, meaningless story I've ever read. Nobody cares about these 2 historic ships. I had never heard of them. I had to look them up. I asked other people. Nobody had heard of them. So basically, I reworded this tiny little article to the point where it wasn't plagiaristic. That's as good as I could do. Here's the story. It's not plagiarism. I hope that's okay. They're like, yeah, that's perfect. Great. Reworded it. That's all we needed. So they ran the ship story, and then sports, and then a little bit of news people banter, and we're out. That's your half hour of news. And that is only one example. That stuff goes on and on and on and on. Now, in terms of national news, local news is intended to, you know, there's all conspiracy theories about how it's intended to scare you into buying the stuff they show on the commercials. I don't know if that's exactly how it works. I think it's just to get people to watch. I don't know that it's going to influence you into buying a Dyson vacuum because you saw that a kid ate a pot brownie. I don't see the connection. All I see is, as a society, our hardwired desire to look at car accidents and stuff like that is manipulated in order to get you to watch the news. And then they get the sponsor money, obviously. But again, I don't know that you're going to go out and buy a set of tires just because you saw that a woman rolled her car. But either way, it's all negativity and it all works. And it's all local. It's local so that, like, oh my God, Berkeley, I've been there before. I might have even seen that balcony that collapsed. Oh my God, Antioch? That's not far from here. That's where a woman drove her car off the side of the road. That's terror in Antioch. It's not. It's not a news story. You don't need to know about it. And I'm not trying to marginalize, you know, human suffering, but then none of those are news stories. The rape isn't a news story. The drunk driver isn't a news story. The pot brownie, it's entertaining, but it's not. It's not a news story. The goddamn ships, not a news story. Balcony, not a news story. Sports and weather. So speaking of sports, when we get to national sports, recently, I don't know if you know who Johnny Manziel is, but Johnny Manziel was, I'm not into football at all, but I know about this guy. He was this great college quarterback. He broke all kinds of records. Johnny Football, they called him. He was going to be drafted in the NFL and become a superstar and, you know, all that. The next Tom Brady or whatever, you know, your good old American boy. Well, Johnny decided once he got into the NFL to show up late for practices and go out and party all night and come in hungover and do all the shit that was detrimental to his team, and he got benched. But as the years have gone by, this was in about 2013, 2014. He did this so much that by 2015, he checked himself into a rehab center for alcoholism, and it did nothing for him. His decline continued into partying his way out of the NFL. And then it was followed by an arrest for, I think it was, I don't have the whole history in front of me, but it was for some sort of getting into a fight. And then his partying continued. He's got no team. Then he's arrested again very recently for domestic violence. And in his mugshot that was published, he tweeted it out. And he tweeted, "At least I had a shirt on this time." Because I guess his last mugshot, he didn't have a shirt. So that was his response, to be basically proud of his partying antics to the expense of his own football career. And the saddest part is the responses he got to that tweet were like, "Party on, dude. Yeah, that's awesome, man. Oh, Johnny Manziel's my idol, dude. He just parties all the time." This guy's been arrested a couple times. He's been to rehab. He lost his fucking job that could make him millions and millions of dollars because he's addicted to partying, alcohol, drugs maybe. I don't know. That hasn't been confirmed. But of course, not everyone is cheering him on. A lot of people just think he's a fucking asshole. And they want him to fail because they look at his actions, they look at his activity, they look at his complete lack of remorse, and they say, "Screw that guy. Screw that guy. I hope he never gets a football team again." And then, thirdly, you have the sports media. And the sports media runs stories about Johnny Manziel night and day, and their entire angle is, what football team is going to take on Johnny Manziel? Where can he play? Who's willing to take the risk? Can he end up on this team? Can he end up on that team? And, oh, by the way, yeah, he's gotten a lot of trouble, but what does that mean for his football career? That, to me, is the most disturbing part, that the media will focus on that rather than the fact that this guy is going to die or severely hurt someone else, not to mention the family and friends that he's destroying their lives. And the question is, what team is he going to play for? Or it's party on, Johnny, or it's, you know what, go fuck yourself. The real story is that this guy has a serious, serious problem. And until the point where he completely hits a rock bottom that affects other people, or kills him, or gets him into a hospital or jail, like for real jail, not just getting probation for domestic violence, until that point, the conversation nationally is going to be about what fucking football team he plays for. I don't care what football team he plays for. I want this dude to get help. And you know what? He does seem like kind of a jerk, but he's also very young, and he's partying all the time. And the dude, I can only hope that he hit some sort of bottom that does not destroy his life or anyone else's, where he can finally realize that he actually has a problem. And then, you know, after he takes care of that, then he can go play football if somebody wants him. I don't care. And there's hundreds of thousands of Johnny Manziels out there. And that doesn't get talked about. Because it's not sports. It's not what football team are they going to play for. If a famous person dies, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, then it's, you know, everybody's up in arms. Heath Ledger, everybody's freaked out. How did this happen? How did this happen? But if someone is in the midst of an addiction, like Mel Gibson, or back in the day when Robert Downey Jr. was, it's just, you know, screw that guy. Get your shit together, man. And it's just not that easy. And I think, you know, to get on my soapbox, we need to be rooting for these people to get better rather than just marginalizing them as bad people and or cheering them on to their ultimate demise. Andy Dick, the comedian, is a good example of that. This guy got into more trouble than you can possibly imagine over decades of just incredibly unacceptable behavior, drug-induced and alcohol-induced antics that disturbed people and basically kicked him out of show business. Andy Dick finally realized what was going on, and he went to rehab for 19 months. 19 months. Not 24 days, not 2 weeks, not some spin cycle, and they spit you back out, and you know, all of a sudden you're back in the world again, and you've got like 2 weeks of like talking about yourself and talking about your problems to some doctor. 19 months. A year and a half this dude spent in rehab, and you know what? That guy's sober. And that guy is out there preaching the message of helping people to get sober. And that's what needs to happen to Johnny Manziel. I hope it does. I really wish the discussion of what football team he's going to play for would end. And the discussion about, you know, how can he get help begins. That's my soapbox about Johnny Manziel, because I've just been so pissed seeing this story run and run and run again. If they're not talking about it, it's down on the bottom scroll rolling by. Johnny Manziel may play for the St. Louis Rams, depending on such and such and such. Who cares? He's not going to be able to until he gets right. So once again, I hope he can find his direction and get better. That's the kind of thing that the sports media goes for. If Johnny Manziel was sober and great and playing great, then yes, they'd be praising him and everything. But they wouldn't be talking about him as much, because it's not sexy when you're doing great. But it's sexy when you got major problems and you got no football team to go to, because then you can speculate, you can talk about it. And let me tell you this, sportscasters, they don't know anything more than you do. If you watch a little bit of sports and you observe what you're seeing, you know as much as they do. It's just a bunch of guesswork. They watch the games just like anybody else. They throw out their opinion on TV, and it seems legitimate, because maybe they're an experienced ex-player, or maybe they're a sports analyst or whatever. Yeah, they may have a little more information than you. They take a little more time because that's their job. But believe me, at the end of the day, it's all bullshit. What they're coming up with is the same thing that any armchair sports fan can come up with. As George Carlin once said, it's all bullshit and it's bad for you. So I hope you've enjoyed this little walk around a newsroom and discussing NBA players and of course, the great Star Wars news. Hopefully Ewan McGregor, in his own Obi-Wan Kenobi movie sometime in the next 5 years or so. Fingers crossed for that. We'll be having another episode coming up pretty soon. We will have a guest, mystery topic. But that'll be out in the next few weeks, and I hope you'll enjoy that one as well. Again, I thank you so much for listening. It seems weird to me that anyone would even spend the time listening to this, and we've gotten some new subscribers from various places that I did not expect subscribers to come from, because they're not just you dear friends and family that listen as well. So, next episode coming up soon. We'll have a guest. We'll have a great topic. And until then, cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
This fetishization of the old days of the NBA has little evidence to back it up.